This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. For months, it was assumed that six candidates would compete in the Democratic primary in Michigan's 6th Congressional District. But two of those candidates are off the ballot, with one of them, Paul Clements, suing over the ruling that he fell 9 valid signatures short of the 1,000 needed to qualify. Gongwer News Service editor Zach Gorchow joins us from the Michigan Public Radio Network studios in Lansing. Hello, Zach.
Hi, Gordon.
Let's begin with this. Paul Clements has run twice before, so he was one of 7 candidates who was disqualified from the ballot, 7 candidates throughout the state who had planned to run for Congress disqualified. Was his case probably the most controversial and maybe the most surprising?
It definitely was. The other candidates were all pretty easy calls, just simply not enough valid signatures from registered voters because they either were not registered, maybe they didn't live in the district. Those were relatively easily dealt with. But Clements was 9 signatures short of the 1,000 signature minimum needed. And his was an unusual case because he lost 77 signatures due to a extremely arcane piece of the petition process to get on the ballot. To get on the ballot for Congress in Michigan, you need to have a minimum of 1,000 signatures from registered voters, and they have to be quote unquote valid. And the problem with the 77 signatures was people marked their community that they lived in, let's say Kalamazoo, and in that box where you put your community of residence, there are 2 other boxes, one that says city and one that says township. And 77 people checked the wrong one. If they lived in the township, they put city. If they lived in the city, they put township. And the Michigan Bureau of Elections invalidated those signatures on that basis, and that caused him to be disqualified.
And the interesting thing about that is, had they not checked either box, not checked city or township, or checked both city and township, then those signatures could have been allowed, correct?
Yeah, the policies of the Bureau of Elections say just what you said, that had they left the boxes totally blank, they would have been counted because the state has what's called the qualified voter file. The staff can go in and check and say, oh, this person did mark city or township. Oh, okay, they're clearly from the city, they're clearly from the township. But it seems to be a relic of the days when all of the voter registrations were on paper at clerks, and so you needed to have some clarity as to where somebody lived. It's really kind of superfluous now in a way.
And Paul Clements, as a result of that ruling, is now going to court and trying to actually get on the ballot. What's kind of the basis of his lawsuit?
Basically, he's just saying that this is, it's totally unnecessary, an unnecessary standard for the reasons I was just saying, that the state can check and see in the qualified voter file what the problem is. He's basically saying it is discriminatory against these voters who, you know, it's an innocent, harmless error is essentially what he's arguing. That so what if they're from the city, say they're from the city and they're really from the township, as long as they're in the district and they're in the, you know, the same name of the community, that should be good enough.
Would this lawsuit perhaps be getting more attention and maybe some additional help from other groups if Paul Clements had been the only Democrat to file in the 6th Congressional District, which he was in both 2014 and 2016?
Certainly, if he was the only Democratic candidate and had been disqualified and the party was left without a candidate, it would be getting a lot of attention. But as you said, there are 4 other candidates, and you know, Paul Clements has had 2 shots at this, and he's lost quite substantially to Congressman Upton both times. The Democrats seem to be much more excited about George Franklin and Matt Longjohn, you know, as far as who has momentum and interest. You know, when you lose a couple races, you do have your core of supporters, but there's going to be others out there who are going to be saying, hey, you know, we need to give somebody else a shot.
Is it a little surprising that someone who has been through this twice got disqualified? If we look at the other candidates running for Congress, including in the 6th District, Eponine Garrett, she's a first-time candidate for Congress. She ended up falling short. Would we say that most of the others are probably inexperienced candidates who have not been through this a couple times, so that they might not know what the pitfalls are?
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. You know, if you've run for Congress twice before and you've gotten on the ballot twice before, it shouldn't be difficult. I mean, it definitely takes a concerted, you know, professional effort. You know, there's a lot of traps and landmines with these petitions, but if you've done it a couple times, you would think that getting it done a third time would not present a problem.
So let's shift gears a little bit here. You blogged a little while back about the task which faces the Democrats if they want to take control of both the State House and the Senate. So let's maybe break those apart and do them one by one. How hard would it be to take the State House?
Difficult. I think the word I used was daunting. The Republicans have a 9-seat majority there. You know, for the Democrats to win majority, they're going to have to flip 9 currently Republican seats. The Democrats have had a lot of positive developments throughout this election cycle so far. Obviously, you have a Republican in the White House who seems to be unpopular, especially with the Democratic base. You also have had a Republican governor in Lansing for 8 years. That makes this a change election. The overall structural dynamics are favorable for the Democrats, even though it's a midterm, which historically has not been terribly kind to them. For various reasons, the Republicans seem to have missed out on getting grade-A quality candidates for a number of the seats now in Democratic hands that will be open because of term limits. You know, the Democrats coming this cycle were looking at having to seriously defend probably 5 seats. But there's really only one of them where the Republicans seem to be legitimately in a position to flip it, maybe 2. So they're not going to have to play nearly as much defense as one would have thought at the beginning of the cycle. That said, if you look at the whole map, the Democrats are going to have to probably flip almost every contested seat out there. They're going to need some type of a wave dynamic. They're going to need to win in places they haven't won before, in Oakland County in particular. They're going to need to win in places like Southwest and Western Kalamazoo County, where Representative Iden holds a seat. They're going to need to win in Eaton County, an open seat, you know, places like Grand Ledge and Potterville and so forth. Those are the kinds of places they're going to have to win. They don't have a great track record of winning on a consistent basis or competing on a consistent basis in those places.
So let's talk about Brand Iden for just a moment. You mentioned him as one of 3 incumbents that Democrats would probably be targeting to try to defeat, to flip control of the House. And I can hear Republicans out there right now saying, hey, wait a minute, didn't I hear on WMUK 2 years ago, maybe from Zach Gorchow, that Brand Iden could be in trouble in 2016 if there had been an anti-Trump wave in Michigan? Of course, that anti-Trump wave never really developed. President Trump won Michigan's electoral votes and Brand Iden was reelected. So is he safer this time around as he runs for reelection for what would be his final term in the State House?
Well, I look at a couple of factors. Number one, he has never broken 50% of the vote. The next thing I look at is Trump is just so unpopular in Kalamazoo County, and he historically has not been very popular in that district, which is places like Portage and Texas Township and so forth. So that sets up a, you know, potential problem for him in that area. Portage is becoming more and more diverse. It's got a relatively large percentage of residents with bachelor's degrees. That is sort of the emerging dynamic of a district that Democrats think we're going to have a chance at flipping some districts we haven't historically won in places that have, you know, showing increasing racial diversification and more people with bachelor's degrees. This time around, too, you know, one of the things that really cost the Democrats is they really did not have a good candidate the last 2 times against Brand Iden. John Fisher had millions spent on his behalf and really couldn't get anything going. They've got 3 candidates this time, 2 of which seem to be serious candidates. Neither of them have a track record of running for and winning elected office, but they both look like, you know, people who can be at least, you know, carry the flag, run a viable campaign.
One of the other districts you say is going to be key for the Democrats is the 62nd in Calhoun County, including the city of Battle Creek. And you say the Democrats probably got a bit of a break here because of John Bison running for state Senate.
Yeah, if Representative Bison had run for reelection, this is one where the Democrats they may have put up a decent candidate, but this may have been one they would have had to write off. I mean, Bison just proved to be a really strong candidate in a district that historically leaned Democrat. It was drawn to be a Democratic district. You hear a lot of Democratic gripes about redistricting. Doesn't apply here. The Republicans drew this district with the idea in mind that it would be the more Democratic district in Calhoun County. And the other factor that I think would have scared Democrats off is Trump did better than expected in this district last time around. I think he carried it, if memory serves. So, but now with Bison out, you know, he had a sort of popular profile as a physician. Now the Republicans are running a guy named Dave Morgan. Interesting story. He's a former Democrat. He ran for the seat as a Democrat
right.
4 years ago. He's a, I think, a former Democratic Party leader locally, but
yes,
he is now
yes.
the chair of the Calhoun County Republican Party. The Democrats are coming back with Jim Hodzma. He's the guy who challenged Bison and came oh so close 2 years ago. I think you look at this on paper, Hodzma starts out with an advantage because he did come so close 2 years ago, and now it's an open seat, and you have the midterm, the dynamic with the president's party being the Republicans, the Democrats having some momentum. But, you know, this has been a tight district for a long time, and I wouldn't expect anybody to pull away with it. But if the Democrats even want to entertain the idea of winning control of the House, they're going to have to win this one.
So speaking of tight races, as we look over at the state Senate, you tell us that it's going to be very, very tough for the Democrats to take control of the state Senate. Your words, it would take a political earthquake, tsunami, EF5 tornado, Category 5 hurricane, pick your phenomenon to flip control of the Senate. Of course, one of the key races that people will be looking at for the Democrats to try to pick up is the state Senate district, which includes Kalamazoo County, which was very, very close back in 2014. If the Democrats are going to make any sort of a run at control, this is one of the coin flip districts you say it has to win.
Yeah, I mean, the Republicans have functionally a 27-11 majority right now. So for outright control, the Democrats need to flip 9 seats. That has never happened in a single Senate election in modern Michigan politics. You have to go back to the days when we elected the Senate every 2 years, 1964, 1932 are the only times the Democrats have flipped that many Senate seats in a single election. So it really would take just something cataclysmic for that to happen. But yeah, you look at the Kalamazoo County district, this is the 20th district, Margaret O'Brien, the incumbent senator who beat Sean McCann by 61 votes as the last precinct came in 4 years ago. It's a rematch, and everybody's expecting this is going to be a barn burner again. You know, O'Brien is very personable and personally popular, and that will put her in good stead. She's worked a lot of different issues. You know, and boy, I was talking about this with a friend the other day. We've been talking, I think, for 2 decades that structurally Kalamazoo County is going to be moving to the Democrats. I could go back to 98 and remember people saying, boy, you know, the Democrats might beat Dale Sugars in that Senate seat. And it just, they have just not been able to get over the top there. But the Trump dynamic may be what finally does it. You know, again, as we talked about, he's very unpopular in Kalamazoo County. You know, it's going to put O'Brien in a difficult position and will give McCann some momentum. That said, it is a rematch. Rematches, typically, the advantage goes to the person who won it the first time. It really is going to come down to has all the effort that O'Brien has put in the last 4 years and her own personal strengths, is that going to be enough to overcome, you know, some wind in her face this time around?
Yeah, does perhaps this state Senate seat represent both the challenges and opportunities the Democrats have? It's a seat which they came very close to in 2014, which was not a very good year for Democrats at all. So you're running now in 2018, which looks like it'll be a better year. But this will be an expensive race, and Margaret O'Brien will have plenty of money to spend. There will be a lot of money spent on her behalf. And then there's that extra challenge that always comes with defeating an incumbent.
Yeah, you look at the Senate map, and as I look at right now, I think you could say right now, on paper, the Democrats are probably the favorites to pick up 3 seats, you know, where they're in a good position. And then there's 2 others I look at as 50-50 districts, and this is one of them. It's a coin flip. You know, I would suspect we're not really going to, unless a huge wave really starts to mobilize in October, I would expect we're not really going to know until late on election night what's going to happen with this one. You know, I would describe, the Democrats, if they could pick up those 5 seats, the 3 where they have an edge on paper, and these 2 coin flip seats, and get this down to, it would be a 22-16 Republican majority, I would think they would be delighted. A 5-seat gain would be historic for the Democrats in the Senate. That is a huge number of seats to flip in one election. They'd still be in the minority, obviously, but at least they'd no longer be completely in the wilderness. For them to actually dream of getting control, they're going to need some serious wave development, some districts that are not favorable on paper, or districts where historically they haven't been competitive, districts where they have people who are first-time candidates. They're going to need something magical. The other thing to remember is they're going to be completely outspent. The Senate Republicans have a massive advantage in spending. Then you pile on the advantage that the Michigan Republican Party will bring in over the Michigan Democratic Party, and that clearly the major A1 Democratic priority in the state is to elect a governor, and then somewhere down the list will be the Michigan Senate. There's a lot working against the Democrats this time, but I will say they do seem to have done a better job on candidate recruitment overall, and they are in a decent position in a number of seats.
So one last thing, Zach, how much could this view of the map get shaken up by the primaries? We still have a primary yet in August, and is it possible there that this could shake out in ways that leave one party or the other stronger and or weaker in certain areas based on the candidates that come out of those? Because we have seen some interesting things in primaries across the country this year.
Certainly. And some of that is, we're just starting our work here of getting to know these candidates and so forth. But we have had instances where, state Democrats have had a preferred candidate who ends up losing in the primary and the district just goes completely pfft, and they're out of luck. Or a primary becomes so antagonistic and negative that the winner is bloodied and weakened and ends up losing the general election in part because of the wounds they've sustained. I mean, I think it'll be interesting to watch the two Democrats duke it out in that Iden seat for the nomination. Two people with completely different backgrounds, professional experience and resume, and they're going to have to make their case to Democrats there why they're the better candidate against Iden. As of now, we don't know whether the Democrats are going to try to put their thumb on the scale at all for one candidate or the other. One thing we've seen this year so far is the state Democrats seem to be saying, we're going to take a step back and just let these candidates fight it out. They've seen in the past this has backfired, where they try to come in top-heavy, heavy-handed, and pick somebody, and the local Democrats rebel against that. I think they want to see that, hey, if you're a good candidate, you're going to win the primary, so let's let the cream rise to the top.
Zach, as always, thank you for your time.
Thanks so much, Gordon.
Zach Gorchow is the editor of the Gongwer News Service. He joined us from the Michigan Public Radio Network studios in Lansing. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.